Before we dive into today's podcast, this episode is sponsored by Rebuy, an end-to-end personalization platform for Shopify and Shopify Plus stores. Now, personalizing your Shopify store isn't a nice to have. It's definitely a must. You know, did you know that over 75% of online shoppers are more inclined to buy from brands that offer a personalized shopping experience? You know, it's no surprise then that stores that embrace personalization, they see significant boosts in conversion rates and average order value and even customer lifetime value. So if you're looking for the simplest and most effective way to deliver smart, tailored experiences to your Shopify customers, look no further than Rebuy. This is a powerful platform and has a suite of game-changing features. A few that I love: AI-powered smart search is really there to help shoppers find exactly what they need. They also have precise and well-timed product recommendations. Really, that's there to increase your cart size. And the best part, I love their smart cart. It's stunning and intelligent shopping cart experience. I would say it's market leading. It's the best. You know, and with results like this, it's clear why more than 10,000 of the fastest Shopify stores have already turned to Rebuy to wow their customers and skyrocket their sales. So don't miss out on the personalization revolution, because it's happening right now. And as a special guest to e-commerce Fastlane listeners, Rebuy is offering the first 45 days absolutely free. And all you have to do is go to rebuyengine.com/Fastlane. And there you can sign up and get going on this platform absolutely free.
You're listening to E-commerce Fastlane, the podcast show to help you build, manage, grow, and scale a successful and thriving company. Powered by Shopify. Listen to real conversations with partners and subject matter experts as they share proven practical strategies, platforms, and the best Shopify apps to help you accelerate your business. The time is now for you to improve efficiencies, grow revenue, profit, and lifetime customer loyalty. Please welcome your host, startup founder, and strategic advisor, Steve Hutt.
Welcome back to E-commerce Fastlane. I'm your host, Steve Hutt. You know, and thank you so much for tuning in today. You know, there's so many podcasts. My guest even has a podcast. We'll discuss that in a minute. But there's so many podcasts out there to choose from. And I massively appreciate the fact that you're taking time and listening to the show today. It's going to be a really, really action-packed show today. And I know I don't say that lightly, because this is a very, very interesting market that we're involved in right now, in 2024 right now. This whole omni-channel experience, and now with TikTok, and you have to think about Amazon, you have to think about your Shopify direct-to-consumer store. And there's a lot of challenges around the competition, the acquisition costs. I mean, we know the ROAS is really tough right now, and CPAs are really strong. It's an odd market right now. But I have an incredible expert right now, runs a company called Voltage. Voltage Holdings is their main company. Voltage Digital Marketing, an acquisition company, they're operators. They really, really understand what is going on from an omni-channel experience of a direct-to-consumer brand, and how you can grow and scale and successfully make an exit. And so I'd like to welcome Neil Tuah to the show. Thank you so much for being here.
All right. My pleasure. Thanks, Steve.
So, you know, I really would like to hear it in your own words first. Man, I've done a little bit of research. I know your website. We have a few questions lined up here today, but I just would like to understand your background and history first, just to kind of set the stage about who you are and kind of why you're here today chatting with me.
Yeah. So to not make it boring and make it relatively quick and get to probably the most interesting things here we can talk about today, which isn't me, but I've been around for about 17 years since I left my corporate career at IBM. I was in knowledge management, human machine language, semantic systems, and AI, back when AI was, you know, still making its way through the corporate world. And most people think AI is today, but I was working on systems at R. Monk and research that was actually touching into the, you know, quantum and Cray computing machines. Wow. And a whole lot of other stuff that I can't go into. But long story short, I've been in technology and business and development for a long time. Got to see the first mobile phone launch at Sprint, and was a part of that team when the first mobile division went out. Got into lead generation and mobile lead generation through apps and installs in third-party countries like South Africa and stuff, where we had dating offers like absolutely crushing it, which led to help raise series of fundings for capital and business. And then I got to the point where I'm like, well, heck, if I'm owning the front end of the offer, I should own the back end of the offer too, which led me to e-commerce, quote unquote, not just digital, but physical products. Right. So getting into the physical product space as a direct-to-consumer marketer, then discovered the Amazon channel as it was launching, you know, past FBA, watched that happen as they acquired that company. And then by 2010, I'm like, well, I have to start looking at this more seriously. And then launched my first brands and got it to our first seven-figure brand around 2013. Mm. So the growth of this market, the challenges, the opportunities, I've seen a lot. The economics of our country, I've seen a lot in our own business for the last 17 years. And, you know, there's been a huge amount of opportunity, but there's a huge shift that's happened since 2019 in this market, which has created adoption and changes and requirements, as you stated earlier, for an omni-channel presence in e-commerce now.
Right.
So the single channel operator days are pretty much gone as far as I'm concerned.
No, 100%. I mean, I thank you for sharing that, because I think that's exactly my sentiment right now too, is that, you know, you have to learn to be an operator by having your own direct-to-consumer brand, but you also have to really be open-minded enough to say, you know what, you have to be where your customers are. It's like the craziness that's going on with SEO right now.
Yeah.
If people only are choosing to go for SEO only and having Google make the decisions about
acquisition. What a mess that's turning into, isn't it?
It's turning into a mess.
Just so many fronts and so many ideas and so many things that people, and there's so much opportunity, and the bar is so low right now. Like, you could literally just crawl like a snake over the bar. So the question goes to where do I put my time, energy, attention, and money at the end of the day? And I know you're very focused on Shopify, and I respect that. I've ran Shopify brands above 100K a month. But the end result is, you know, at the end of the day, you can no longer just be single channel. You must be agnostic to the channel. You must be to the customer, to the message, to the narrative. And that can translate into the different psychology of buyers across these platforms. And I think that's where people get confused, because they have this kind of bit of naive idea that if I launched on DTC and I go to Amazon, everyone's going to want my product. Or if I go to Amazon and launch and then I move it to DTC, Shopify, or TikTok shops, everybody's going to want my product. And that's not exactly right. Every platform has a different psychology of buyer. The mechanics can be taught to a 19-year-old high school dropout. Ask me how I know. The end result is, if you don't understand your customer on the first channel, it doesn't matter where the second, third channel is.
Right.
And if you don't understand how to acquire that customer profitably, then it doesn't matter which channel you get on. You're not going to run the business very long.
So before I jump into some of the strategies and tactics, we have a couple things that I know you want to share today, that, you know, more outside of the omni-channel experience and how Amazon and TikTok and others fit into the mix. But you also have different divisions of Voltage. And so can you explain just for our listeners about, like, all the different parts of the Voltage business? Because I think that might open their minds about kind of like why you're a great operator and the services you do offer.
Yeah. So first and foremost, we run our own business. We run our own brand. I don't have a course. So do you guys put away your wallets and all that nonsense? That's not how this works. Right. We are consultants to brands. I've always been a consultant to brands and high level companies and big pieces. That's what I was doing at IBM, and just translated that into my own management consulting firm when I left. So it is about the business of operations. You can't consult if you don't do. So at the end of the day, when it comes down to the differences in what's happening on your channel with ROAS, when it comes down to the differences with Amazon and the FBA fees and the inbound and outbound fee challenges, as well as just acquiring customers profitably through PPC and organic channels that Amazon is, there is, you know, by numbers and specific processes you must follow today. Like, you can't just wing it anymore. And the way Voltage is structured, it is that we will train operators as CEO operators to work at the micro level first as an operator, and then move into the CEO where they become an on operator. And the way we help them do that is, if they get started and move along and they have a product line, and then we help them source to higher profitability and elevate their brand through what we call a green light process of determining value and profit, not at an emotional level, but at a data driven level. As I mentioned, my whole background has been in data. It has been in the knowledge of data, the movement of data, the dissemination of data, the acquiring of knowledge and IP and intellectual capital from people, and translating that backwards into data. And so everything we have developed is data driven. Okay. All decisions made on data. You can't run a business by the seat of your pants. And I think still so many people think that that's how it really works. Like, we just kind of, you know, we're just really good at guessing everything right. And so what we're good at is failing incorrectly. So we know the data that we can then learn from. And so as Voltage has gone forward, we then operate people the opportunity to work along with that, both in their structured brand, if it's a DTC or Amazon, or building up a new brand, and then give them the opportunity to partner with us later on, a walk before you run strategy, in which we kind of incubate them, bring an operator to the table, and they bring maybe capital, or they themselves are the operator and we bring capital through our partner program. Or we move them into a full account management within our organization, and it becomes mailbox money to them, and our operations run the whole business through to exit. If we are controlling the business through to exit, it is a much easier way to exit, because usually the companies that want to buy will buy because we're the operators, right? And that's ultimately where we keep getting positioned. Or we'll go out and acquire certain companies in a specific format in our portfolios and what we are working with now under a structured relationship with a company called Patriot Capital. They're a veteran-owned business, and our arrangement is to acquire 5 companies this year through their PE and acquisitions and home offices, and then we're going to place a veteran into the operator position. Voltage becomes the primary operator who will train them as an operator, a veteran operator. And then in 60 months after they're fully trained, vetted, and go, we will then subjugate ourselves to the secondary operator place, and they will take over primary operator, at which point they have an opportunity to buy the company back from us. And we will help them structure the profitability and growth and the payment through the 60 months in which they're operating the business, so that they don't have to pay anything to grab the business at the end of 60 months. And then we still stay involved in the next growth and next level to home offices that can't deploy less than 25 million. And so we're elevating it up to another sale after that. Does that make sense? I know.
Yeah. No, definitely. And one thing for sure is I'm going to kind of maybe expand a tiny bit on that through the show notes. I'm definitely going to put some links and stuff to the Voltage Digital Marketing, the voltagedm.com website, to kind of, because it talks, you have some really good case studies and some real people in their own words, as you say, that are talking about like the service that you offer and just how you have helped them become better operators because you have done it yourself. I just love eating your own dog food, to be honest with you, because
got to these days, right? I mean, we're getting to be a very smart consumer market. We have a lot of data at our fingers when it comes to purchasing and decisions. And, you know, I know a lot of people want to initially think that everything on the internet is a scam, but yet they still use the internet.
Yeah, I know.
What it gets down to for me is I spent a lot of time developing my relationship into the internet and the interweb and all of this stuff. And my name is very short and my brand is a one-letter word. And so I spend a lot of time consolidating who I work with,
right,
so that it stays very controlled. So I am not one of those people who wants to put 100 people a month into my business. We put 5 to 7 people that are qualified. I don't have a sales team. Everyone speaks to me.
Right.
So everything is gated and vetted to ensure the quality of the operator. In the same way they're looking at us, I'm doing diligence in reverse. And there's no fake scarcity in that, because I technically want someone who's going to go for 3 to 5 years in the business that they're going to develop, that I eventually want to acquire, because that's part of our model. So I have a long-term vested interest. Everybody's like, well, what's your 3 to 5 year plan, Steve? And it's like, well, if you're working with me, it's going to exit a business. If it's going to exit the business, it's because I helped spend enough time with you over 3 to 5 years that you will have a successful business that's worth buying. The same way that I homeschool my girls, because I want to spend time with them later. I want them to be good people. I want to be around them. So if I homeschool them and train them up, then they'll be people who I can be friends with later, and I'll actually want to have them around.
I love that. I'm going to pivot a bit to a couple topics that are on top of my mind right now. I know these are topics that I see people messaging me actually on social and stuff. Number one is, and I want, because you're boots on the ground as an operator, I want to know your take on cookies right now, the kind of cookie apocalypse that's happening, iOS 14, you know, all 15, all the stuff that happened with Apple and the privacy things. Cause people are really worried about the 7-day attribution window and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
And so I'd like to hear your take on it and kind of what you're doing that you see successful.
So one of the ways that I've been avoiding some of that is, you know, by pricing and by value, I intentionally don't look at CPL cost or even CPA cost in the same way maybe some of you do.
Okay.
So I look at it in terms of, if I can gain first customer acquisition, I've already won. It really gets down to how I follow up, how I control the message, and what value is provided to the customer after that, right? So when it comes to things like dealing with market changes and conditions, I'm more adaptable to go with the flow and not be as concerned. There are ways to develop certain mechanisms to avoid those complications like CPMs and stuff if you're adding a specific higher value. If you're trying to sell, for example, a $10 product right now, you aren't going to make it, right?
Fair enough.
For us, we sell $50 to $150 in retail price point. We require our products to have more than $12 in net profit minimum on our channel.
Okay.
We have set certain criteria for brand and type of products that go into those brands to ensure profitability of P&L. So there are just compromises we're not willing to make. And it's not as easy for a startup to do that today. We're more capital intensive now than we were 15 years ago. So we've gotten, you know, blessed to be in a position to do that. And I realize not everyone can do that, but you have to understand that if that's where the market's going, that's where you have to go, or you simply can't play in it.
Right.
So in terms of attributions and iOS and stuff, I'm not as concerned about those things really at the end of the day, because there are other mechanisms to get around them, right? Go to HiROS with Alex Becker if you need to be, you know, track these things properly. You're going to track it properly, right? Even with changes in CPM and costs like that, you still have to, you're going to have to adapt and pivot. This is probably the year of the pivot as much as Business Insider said it was the year of the creator. The end result is every year pivots, and with inflation and economy and changes in the economy, you're going to have to pivot as well. So you can literally yell into the wind, or you can use the wind to lift your sails. It's just, you know, it comes back to the same old dumb analogy of it's glass half empty or glass half full, right? There are all those challenges. They are not one of them a fault point that collapses the whole business. It is a series of fault points like an avalanche that collapses it.
Right. Kind of reminds me of this RFM modeling, this recency frequency monetization strategy. And I think that's one of the things that I hit home a lot with the brands that I used to manage at Shopify was I always say, you know, yes, net acquisition, you know, try to get one as your first customer as cheaply as possible, but having a high AOV and then having some profit, as you said, at least $12 or so or more, just because the net cost of acquiring. But the next step is that, you know, is there data to say, well, if you bought product A, statistically, we know that these are the top three product B products that bought in this time frame. And there is technology right now, I mean, certainly through third-party pixels and stuff of using Triple Whale or Bloomreach, or I mean, there's quite a few out there, not just using the Facebook and Meta and TikTok pixels to, and then having their attribution windows around all that, having third-party tools to kind of help you say, no, you've acquired net new. Okay, but the second sale, which is really where the profitability starts coming into the equation, it's just like, but here's the right timing and the right channel to acquire that second
sale. And
that's
very important. You say the timing and the channel. So it's not if you should do these things, it's really when, because when becomes a matter of execution and knowledge, right? You may not have the knowledge yet to get into, say, an Amazon platform if you're on Shopify.
Correct.
You may not have the right knowledge yet to take your Amazon brand and put it onto TikTok shops. So if you do it, it's a really a matter of taking the time to exercise the ability to learn the skills and the tools you just mentioned to get that channel actually open. And at the end of the day, understand how your avatar, your psychology of buyer works on that channel versus another one.
Right.
Someone on Amazon is a very different psychology of buyer than someone on TikTok shops, right? But here's the thing. They cross over a lot.
Yeah.
So when you're talking about attributions, windows, and AOVs and increasing your value, one of the ways DTC consumers, sellers should do that to reach their consumer is to get a spillover channel. They should have an Amazon channel where their brand is recognizable, because if you grow this 50, 100K a month and spend in the Meta AdWords front end channel DTC, you're going to see up to 18% of that fall back to Amazon, right? They become the like fallback channel.
Right.
That halo effect that occurs means you've got found money most likely to increase not only your AOV, but your customer value and your lifetime value of that customer by opening that additional channel to ensure that you could track up to 18% of your forward spend backwards into a secondary channel. Okay. They're not falling over to TikTok shops right now from Shopify, and Shopify is not getting TikTok shops to fall over to them. They're falling backwards to Amazon.
Right.
Well, so if you're on TikTok shop, we're getting up to 25% attributed halo effect back to Amazon, which is lifting the Amazon brand.
Yeah. Well, and I'd add too that the SEO value of Amazon, just from an organic search perspective.
Oh, it's huge.
It's just massive.
It's a massive domain authority. It's 99 plus. It goes to YouTube. It goes to Google. We rank a product on Amazon and it shows up on the top page for Google.
Right.
We take that keyword and go rank it on YouTube. Bam. You just hit the three largest info-based search engines with SEO.
Yeah.
All the way down for your reviews, the questions that are asked on Amazon, the individual review pages. There are multiple points, not just your single listing point, in which Amazon SEOs into the search engines. Mm. So that's a huge amount of power, right? You want to itemize a particular keyword of top search or search quality that is targeting top sales for you on Amazon. Go put a blog up with that keyword.
Right.
Right. This is not rocket science.
No, 100%.
It's just execution. And I think a lot of people hear me and they go, gosh, Neil, that sounds like a lot.
Yeah.
But it's time. It's when you do it. You should be doing it in steps. So what's the strategy really come down to at the end of the day? Mm-hmm. I personally like to incubate brands on Amazon because I know there's 150 million buyers and it solves some of the ROAS CPM problems for direct to consumer. I can prove very quick that I can get a brand organically moving in Amazon, PPC costs in Amazon while they've risen to an average of $1.45 CPC. Mm-hmm. If my products and retail are high enough, then I don't care what my A cost is, my average cost of sales. What I'm actually caring about is what my tacos is, my total advertising cost of sales. And what my bigger metric that we target at Voltage is to go after the CLTV. And our CLTV, a customer lifetime value, manages to match when we do our what's called our 5x5 playbook, the $1,000 that an average Amazon consumer spends in a year on that platform. Mm. Amazon's told us that. So if that means that what? I have to have both product. I have to have a good AOV. I have to have additional products or additional subscribe and save products in that platform to reach that much sales with my customer. So if you think about it from a base perspective, if you're a new seller on Amazon selling a $49 product, how many times in a year do you have to sell that to get to 1,000? Okay.
Yeah.
So see the problem? Okay.
Yeah.
So now we need to do what? Put more products on Amazon in order to get to 1,000, in order to get enough of them backwards into subscribe and save, in order to get our AOV up. So then we've got to put for gear, accessories, and other products that do complement all the product types and variations that Amazon buyer is going after. An Amazon mom buyer who buys one thing for her newborn baby is going to buy 50 things for her newborn baby on Amazon. And if you don't have enough of that product in Amazon, you're not going to gain her market share. So once I know that I'm after that, I know where my product plan goes, right? I've got to back into a quarter by quarter growth model to get to a base of products on Amazon. Most Amazon core sellers, or even most Amazon sellers, don't have more than 5 sellable SKUs in the market. That's your opportunity if you're listening to this today.
Yeah.
With that amount of SKUs, I then know that I have a number of hero type products that I can then go test on TikTok shops, which you should absolutely be doing. And by the way, some of the best selling products on TikTok shop right now were really hot in 2015, but I would not sell them today on Amazon. Mm-hmm. Now, how do you solve that equation? Well, there's Shopify. There's direct to consumer, mm-hmm. right? There's another channel to opening that up. And if you turn that into a, maybe not a loss leader, but a first market product,
right,
then you can look at the secondary and tertiary products. Okay, or profile two or three avatars where you get to that 50, 150 and above, and then get those products in the market next.
It's interesting I was just gonna make a comment too about the Amazon thing, because I had a lot of brands that, like I said, in Shopify that I was working with, and they were apprehensive about going to go on Amazon. And I said, no. At least put a small selection of your products up there, maybe not all colors and all variants, but at least test to see where the market actually is as relates, because I think there is that blend over effect of being found organically in Amazon.
100%. How do you do that real quick? Yeah. You go to Amazon and you type your brand name in. Uh-huh. Like we did this with a guy yesterday. He's like, we don't have an Amazon presence. I'm like, okay, well, give me, you know, what's your brand? And he's like, here's my brand. And we went to Amazon and live, I showed him. We started to type in the first three letters of his brand, and all the top 10 search results for the first three letters were his brand.
Right.
So if you guys do that right now, you'll find out people are looking for you on Amazon.
Yeah.
That's found money.
It is.
And what they're doing is they're buying your competitor's product, and you paid to acquire them in your funnel for, you know, $150 CPM on Facebook.
Yeah.
It's true. They went over and bought something else on Amazon.
Yeah.
So you've got to look at these as strategies. Okay. Yes, there's tactics. And yes, you can really screw up Amazon right now because they've made some difficult things in the market to defend themselves against Chinese sellers and other marketers.
Right.
So they've made some complex challenges. They are trying to, in all intents and purposes, if you are listening to this and you're like, hey, Neil, myth 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 on Amazon, like we can line up the narrative, right? They're all saturated. There's no opportunity. No makes money. And Amazon's charging you too many fees, right? Okay. How do you overcome all that? Our fees have all gone down. We're actually more profitable. And I'm actually excited about what happens in the next 2 months, because maybe 50,000 sellers are going to run out of the market. And who are they being forced out of the market? Retail, online arbitrage, and wholesale. Mm-hmm. Okay. Amazon doesn't want them on the platform. They've kind of taken advantage of a feature function set that they put in place years ago that really isn't for private label. It's for someone who wants to jump on a listing and sell somebody else's product. And that became a huge thing, right? The whole online, and by the way, Amazon automation scams with your, you know, sharing profits crap and flipping products for profit on their platform. Don't do that. That really is a true scam. Yeah. Horror stories of people coming in losing hundreds of thousands of dollars on those programs. Do not do that. Run your own business, own 100% of it. The end of the story is that they're pushing those people out of the platform intentionally, right? Because they have the highest return rates on their products. They want private label sellers. They want brand builders. They don't want you flipping products on their property. They don't want to be eBay. They don't want to be seen like eBay. They don't want to be like a Walmart. They don't want to be like a garage sale. They want to be seen as a high-end private label brand builder who controls the message from, you know, door to door and last mile. Mm-hmm. And if you're taking that away from them, you're going to suffer. So I'm seeing businesses that may be doing $10 million a year in the wholesale arbitrage online space that are going out of business. Mm. Right?
Yeah. I have another thing that I want to chat with you about, because I have a direct story around this, where this was a hair removal product, very mm-hmm. famous brand, not on Amazon. Well, sorry, they started Amazon. So they had their own store. They're doing FBA, doing their thing. Then Amazon said, no. We love this product. So there's two things are going to happen. Number one, you're not going to sell on here anymore. Or number two, they forced them to say, no, we're going to buy your product in wholesale and we're going to sell it on behalf of you on our network. And so, I'm worried about Amazon's power and having a lot of data and knowledge around best-selling products. I mean, Amazon owns hundreds of private label brands that they've acquired that people don't even know that they're even owned by Amazon. So I just want to understand your thought process around, should anybody be scared that Amazon has all the data around successful products? I don't want to bring up a shoe manufacturer and who chose to not want to sell on Amazon. They just knocked it off. But like, I don't want them to come across as Amazon being evil, because they're not. But I just want to know what your lay of the land is about data and their access to it.
Well, I wouldn't go as far as, of course, I agree. I wouldn't say evil. Opportunistic? Yeah, possibly. As a policy, are they going out and stealing people's brands? No. As a bad actor inside of their companies, are they going out and taking products and doing some of this product management stuff? Yes. Yeah. They've had bad actors, and one of them, they're getting sued right now from a guy who proved that they basically knocked off one of his brand product. Right. And so they should be held accountable for that. But ultimately, that's not a policy. It's a bad actor.
I see.
We've had some of our clients, where we discovered that one of the brand managers was being paid like $6,000 to knock them off, right, by a competitor. So if you want to talk about the evils of the capitalistic market, which has a boundary, I love capitalism, more than I love the other isms, but there are boundaries of capitalistic things that can be bad in this market, in all markets. And frankly, you can attribute those problems to Meta too, right? Like when they had a little bit of battle here a few years ago, I got my account shut down on because I was saying the word Amazon and they got into a feud with Parler, right? I got my TikTok shop killed last year with my ads account because they were launching TikTok shop and I was saying the word Amazon. So they just retroactively killed all my ad campaign, right? Wow. So just ahead of launching TikTok shop. So there's the evils of platforms and competitive things that we can fall into playing on any platform space at the end of the day. And when we're in their backyard, we got to play. It's like going over to the neighbor's house, right? You can't just take off your undies and get in the pool. You have to remember whose neighborhood you're playing in and what backyard you're in, right? Because there's kids watching. So at the end of the day, do they do things that are nefarious? To some degree, they do. As if I seen it as a policy for the company, no, I've seen bad actors. And it's easy to blame the company for bad actors. Now, that comes back to policies and internal management stuff that they need to resolve. They are being sued by the FTC right now because they are having issues with brand and pricing and fees structures. And it seems to be that they are overfeeing their people. But if you look at it objectively, there are reasons why they're doing that in the business model. And part of it is to sustain economic conditions and changes in market. It's to deal with all the returns and other stuff for inventory. There are reasons they're trying to change the business. And there are people who are going to get caught up in that because they've been sold a bill of goods in many ways. Right. Like you can get rich off wholesale and you can't. I ran a wholesale division at eight figures at 7% net profit. And I had, brands running with operators that I was barely touching at 30% net profit. So on the private label versus wholesale, I mean, it sounds sexy, but the margins are really low. Maybe if you can get to 13% net profit on wholesale, you're doing really good. But with inbound storage fees and outbound and ability to move that product, all of a sudden you've got to get 3PLs or put it into Amazon Warehouse Distribution, AWD, all of a sudden you're losing a lot of profit. So you see those market conditions and you need to look at the pros and cons. Amazon, I jokingly analogize it like a hammer, right? You can buy all kinds of different hammers and they'll do all kinds of good and you can use them to build amazing things or you can smash your thumb or they're like the third tool used to kill people behind baseball bats, right? Yeah. So they can be used for bad and they can be harmful if used improperly. So when we're playing on these platforms, you just got to sort of play by the rules and you have to sort of navigate it into certain areas and ways where you see your opportunity. And that is our ability to pivot. And if you can't pivot with the marketplace, you will fall victim to it.
I want to talk about Amazon's fulfillment options for D2C brands. So there could be a wholly owned warehouse. You could have a 3PL. You can use FBA and have hand over your products there. There's also the e-commerce fulfillment option available through Amazon. So what's your take on any of these and why people need to choose one or the other?
Well, if they're brand new, you're going to get a 5,000 unit minimum when you set up your first seller account. And that is for Amazon's fulfilled by Amazon warehouses, right. FBA warehouses. Right. During the capacity growth of that 10-year jump that happened in 3 months in the first quarter of 2020, they went out and started buying all the warehouses space they could get. They were in hypergrowth mode. So they bought all these warehouses and they created a new division called AWD, Amazon Warehouse Division. Right. And originally they let us just put all the product we wanted in there, and then they turned it into an auction formatting. So you have to kind of bid on the space for how much you need. And then you can have that product sent to the AWD warehouse and it automatically checks in like it hit the FBA warehouse. Okay. So you have additional capacity growth with AWD. Do the pricing right, structure your profit correctly, and it's a really great option. We have third-party companies, the 3PLs on the East and West Coast. One of them is a client of ours on the West Coast. And they keep rates pretty strong for us because we move decent volume. So there's another place to pull it over. When you look at Amazon as a basic logistics company, well, they're the sixth largest logistics company in the world now, okay? They're a juggernaut. Right. It's a miracle the damn thing works. Right. The end of this is that I can move a TikTok shop brand in now with MCF or multi-channel fulfillment from Amazon and use it like a third-party dropshipper. So if I've got product selling on Amazon, I don't need another 3PL or AWD from additional product line. I can have the TikTok shop basically be fulfilled in less than 2 days by Amazon.
I see. Okay. Oh, that's
so
amazing.
That multi-channel operates really well. And you can do that on Shopify too. Right. In fact, for a couple of years, Shopify took off their option to do that and they just put it back recently to give you the ability to do MCF fulfillment through your Shopify. So when I look at it from logistics and cost, as long as the numbers work correctly, then I have Amazon as both a backbone, a spillover and from the halo effect and a 3PL operator that allows me to expand into Shopify and TikTok shop fast without going through a whole lot of logistical and mechanical problems.
Since you're deep into this too, it's more for my information, and I'm sure my listeners are curious about this, but Shopify acquired Deliverr for like $1 billion a few years back.
Yeah,
and that was part of their expansion plans for Shopify's fulfillment network. That clearly, you know, Toby kind of pulled that back and said, no, this is not working. And then it kind of got sold off last year. Yep. And so what's your take on that? And why do you think it didn't work?
Well, you know, keeping up with the juggernaut of Amazon is terribly difficult. They're like 28% of the market share, headed towards 38% here shortly. Because of that, it's such a hard push to compete with them. The same way it's hard to open a grocery store today and compete with Walmart. So if you're going to, you've got to come up with something like Trader Joe's. Like Trader Joe's per store averages more per customer per store than Walmart does. Right. So they're much more profitable. Mm-hmm. They're more agile and they're smaller. And they offer some unique values you can't get from Walmart. Sure. So we take that same thing and we got to say, well, Shopify just made something that tastes like chicken. it tastes unique.
No.
Right. Like they didn't even put any jerk seasoning on it. Like, come on. Like this was nothing. And so it didn't work. TikTok shop might be about to fall victim to that, too. They're opening what's called FBT, fulfilled by TikTok. And they're now wooing some top sellers to come in and beta that. And so you can store your products and have it shipped in 2 days or less through TikTok. So the opportunity for that might or might not work because TikTok has more of a platform to consumer role, which I know that Facebook is going to have to do soon. And maybe even X is going to follow this platform as a marketplace and incentivize because there's just a great connectivity between the affiliates and the ability to deliver product and the accountability and violations program they put in place between them means that I can put out 100 sample requests and all of them are going to leave me a video or they're going to get dinged. Mm. So no longer do I have to try to track people down to find out whether or not they're going to leave a video. I know for a fact they are. So and then I can check all kinds of stats on TikTok too about affiliate side. In terms of their gross volume, the legitimate numbers they're running, their legitimate connectivity to the platform, and a whole lot of things that validate who I can actually choose to affiliate my product. Affiliation of product is going to be 2024.
I'm going to talk about TikTok shops in a minute too, because I have some AI questions in the health and wellness space.
Yeah.
It's so interesting. So I believe that the new acquirer of Deliverr / Shopify's fulfillment network, this Flexport company, I think they're probably really the only, just because they're soup to nuts from importing containers from China through to their whole network now, and then owning part of that whole Deliverr network. So I think they're an interesting acquirer, I think there is some potential, but I do agree that Amazon has a foothold. Do you have any comments on Flexport at all?
I don't know. That's going to go truthfully beyond my knowledge at this point. So I can't answer. I'll just say I don't know because I don't deal with
it. Fair enough. Okay. So the TikTok shop, so this came on my radar in the last, I would say maybe a month or so. And now with AI being so popular and AI generated images and people creating really fast and snappy scripts, and they're selling supplements and health and wellness products on TikTok shops. And there's guys that are literally making 100K a month or more, you know, really selling as affiliate partners. So so what's your take on the affiliate and AI generated kind of scripts and audio and snappy fast kind of things that people are producing now with a TikTok shop link at scale? That's on the affiliate side. So selling other people's successful products and great tools out there to see what is successful in other networks or even on TikTok, and just kind of piggybacking along with that on the affiliate side. Or is there also opportunity in TikTok shops doing the same process but on a private label?
Yeah. So the overarching answer to your two questions is yes. Yes to the creator and yes to the TikTok shop with the creators or affiliates behind you. Let me explain this. So as a creator myself, I got started on it about 6 months ago to go in and be a creator and just start affiliating products so I could see from firsthand and from my own experience how to move products, how the videos worked, how the, you know, AI versus faceless versus, you know, face videos worked. And started a little creator program for my client list and brought in some additional creators and stuff. And we've got a couple girls doing about $1,000 a day in profit right now on the creator side. So that is a huge opportunity. We call it the Simple Profit Playbook, which is literally just building up little videos of affiliate products. And with the commission, you make a video, you track it. It is so easy. It's ridiculous. If you want to make a side hustle, check it out because it's really stupid simple now. And as Business Insider said earlier, you know, it's a year of the creator. So there's a lot of brands that want creators and understand the value of them. If I give away a 25% commission on the other side of the house for somebody who becomes a creator, that is a really cheap cost of good versus a $100 CPM or a, you know, $90 CPA cost on an acquisition channel. So, and I can go out and reach thousands of these creators who want and are hungry to make money. And as I can get a flurry of them moving who want to produce the product and actually start producing good videos, some of them are faceless, some of them are on camera, some of them are AI driven, then they want to promote it more. So if some start to pop off, it goes great. So I literally did a podcast with a gentleman yesterday in detail about this. He's a friend of mine, and I got to talking with him about this and said, hey, you better come on a podcast and tell me, because he's doing about 10,000 a day on TikTok shops right now. And so what he was explaining, and I'll tell you in his own words, because my experience with TikTok shop on the brand side is a little smaller than his at this moment. He's doing over 200,000 a month. We're not there yet, but I can see where we're going to get there, was that, you know, about 100 sample requests he gives out, 80% of those will maybe make onesie twosies. The 20% he'll make 10, 20, 50 sales a day on, and then one or two of those 100 requests will pop off. And by pop off, I mean it will go into the millions, and then he'll go into the thousands a day in sales. And when they start to see that, other affiliates are like, hey, this thing's trending. I want to pick up on it. So then they go out and make sample requests and pick up. He gave away around $20,000 worth of inventory through sample requests, and it turned into about a $200,000 a month business. 80% of that is organic affiliate sales. 20% of it is CPA through TikTok shop. And he actually maxed his ability to spend around $2,000 a day. So there's actually a limitation on the amount of bandwidth, and the language and learning models are not there yet. And they're not moving into the niches within niches in terms of the power of, say, metadata. So you can't get to $10,000 a day spend right now. So there's simply a limitation to that. But where can you gain the opportunity? And that's on the affiliate channel. So once again, to just summarize, on the creator side, we got people making thousands to tens of thousands to hundreds of thousands a month just being an affiliate creator. Just be very careful with what kind of products you promote right now, because you don't necessarily want to go and, you know, pump a bunch of supplement products you don't really know the truth about. Okay. But there are all kinds of other product opportunities to make between 20 to 30% commissions. You upload the video, it goes. If something pops off, you do it again, 5-10 times a day, you're making videos. Just do it in mass and something will kick off, and then follow the one that kicks off by simply repeating it 5 or 7 more times. And you got yourself the possibility of making, you know, $10,000 a month. It's not unrealistic to do that extremely fast and literally in the next 30 days.
Yeah.
So it's a huge opportunity for the creator side. Now, again, the private label side, to go and summarize that, affiliates. When you get into the TikTok shop and you get your products on there, go and send requests. We use a bot that I have tested, a couple of market bots, and they're not cheap right now because there's no competition. So they're charging you like $500 to $600 a month for these bots. And pretty soon they're going to be about $100 a month. But right now, there's not a lot of competition. And in fact, I've got my developers reverse engineering one because I'm like, I'm not going to put that out for 10 or 15 brands. So you guys are going to need to develop one of these and we'll run it internally. But it was sending around 2,000 to 3,000 messages a day to affiliates.
Okay.
And we were getting between 50 to 100 requests a week for our products. So it is an extremely early, fast moving adopter opportunity. To basically take 6 to 12 weeks from if it's a dead start of a brand or you've got a brand you're moving in, by the time you give the product sample request, let it take about 30 days to send out, you know, 15, 20, 30,000 messages and then get up to 100 sample requests out the door. That'll take you about another 6 to 8 weeks for it to mature in the market and then watch what happens. If you got a good product that's in demand, that's validated on Amazon or Shopify channel, you're really going to watch that you don't have to, per se, get the narrative right of the psychology of the buyer on TikTok because the affiliates are going to do it. So it's a very fascinating crossover that you don't have the same kind of challenges on a Shopify to Amazon crossover.
Right. No, it definitely does. No, 100%.
And I know they're going to make the videos because they're going to get dinged on their creator account if they don't. There's a 2-week accountability period to post that video or they get dinged and lose their creator account. So every sample I give out is going to get a video.
I actually, before I kind of go to my next question, it's so interesting too, because I've also seen there is some platforms out now, maybe this is kind of what you're talking about right now, that actually talks about this, I guess, looks at the data on TikTok and finds out products that are selling well and gives creator, yeah, like a Cladina or a Cloud, for the name.
Kaloa Data is one of them.
Uh-huh. What's it called?
Kaloa, K-A-L-O-A data.
Kaloa data. It's one of these ones. And so there is technology out there to say, hey, what is currently working? And if you really just kind of want to get on the bandwagon as a creator, this is one way of doing it and have your own spin on either an AI generated video, headlet, whatever you're doing, that certainly could be an option. But I also think, hey, if you're in the same private label market and there's a certain kind of a competitive product that's doing well, maybe there's some learnings out of, well, what are other creators doing selling a competitive product and what can we do to model that success?
Well, you can go to voltagedm.com/simple-profit-playbook to learn how to become a creator and to do the research required to give you the product ideas. Okay. From a brand perspective, being a creator, you then see into the marketplace and into the marketplace and the product, you can see how many units they're moving. You can see how much commission they're getting. You can see their copy. You can see their graphics and images. And you can see roughly how much they're making, which you cannot do on other platforms at that level of disclosure. And because of that, it's very easy for you to discover products that you can test relatively fast. Now, here's some of the gotchas to be aware of. You got to deliver it from the United States in 2 days or less.
Yeah.
So you can't AliExpress dropship this stuff, just so we're very clear.
True. Okay. Yeah.
You have to be able to produce samples and products for the affiliates. So there's going to be some cost for this. It's not a free mechanism. You can get signed up for free, get a seller account and put all that online. Mm-hmm. And right now, by the way, they're subsidizing anywhere between 30 to 50% of the sale. So my buddy, I was mentioning earlier with a $60 product, there's at one point they were subsidizing 50% of that.
Oh, wow.
Right. So he, after cost and stuff, they were paying about $24, $29 for the product and the rest for him was profit. Mm. So they are also lowered fees. They were zero to get out of the gate. They are now doing roughly 3 to 6% based on where your volume is. And pretty soon they'll be at 8%. Now, think about it, right? From a platform fee, the average is on Amazon at 15%, but can go higher than that. It's a little lower for certain categories. Ones we don't play in, like clothing, they lowered that down below 15% for clothing, but we don't play there anyways. So the average is around 15. So on TikTok, you'll have about 8% soon for their market platform fees. But if they keep subsidizing even 30% of the product, it's stupid for you not to. And they're offering free shipping. So if you use the TikTok shipping, it's free. So you can add that back into your profit bottom line. So you can get your brand going, get your profitability going, get your products out there. And as these change, you'll need to pivot as they put their fees on, which they will do. But right now, you have so many opportunities to test it. It's just stupid for you not to do it on the shop owner side if you've got a product and brand that's not currently setting in there.
Yeah. So I'll put it in the show notes, voltagedm.com/simple-profit-playbook. And then you can go there.
You got to be a creator.
Yeah. Why not?
I make a couple grand a month passive just putting up stupid videos myself that don't even have my face on them.
Yeah. There you go.
It was proving the market concept. It's fascinating though. If somebody goes in and really doubles down 5, 6, 10 videos a day, it is just a matter of time before one of those goes viral. And I've got a guy that did this the other day. He made about 170,000 in sales on a product from 2015 on Amazon. You wouldn't sell today. He got this hook and it had like 10,000 comments and he made, you know, the gross volume was about 170,000. After commissions, he cleared somewhere around 75 grand.
It's lovely.
Crazy time.
I know. I want to talk about industry narratives and some misconceptions. It's one question that I think is so interesting to me, because I think a lot of people, I can think right away is Amazon, like, you know, what's going on? Is it saturated? And I'm sure you have a take on that, but like, what are any misconceptions in this field of kind of direct to consumer and multi-channel marketing? And is now a good time for you to maybe address or debunk some of these narratives?
Some of the myths, right? Is Amazon saturated?
Yeah.
There are saturated products on Amazon. There are not saturated brands.
Okay.
You understand the difference?
Yes.
Absolutely. I think a lot of people get caught up because they're operating at that product level because they're treating it like a side hustle or a hobby business. If you're going to be a seller on Amazon, you must be a professional seller. In the same way, you must be a professional business developer if you're going to go omni-channel, and you must turn yourself into a professional business operator. The side hustle concept of these platforms are operating with private label and physical inventory simply doesn't work. If you need the side hustle and you need to maintain some extra cash, then find a side hustle that is more digital marketing, or go be a creator that doesn't involve you in the logistics and business side of running an operation. Yeah. You simply won't make it, or get the knowledge. You either invest in the knowledge,
I would do that first,
or you invest in what you know.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Yeah.
So there are saturated products that people fall into, but vanity metrics like revenue or vanity metrics like how many units it moves a day on Amazon, I don't give a blank what it moves for somebody else. I care about what it moves for me. And so if I use that as a gauge, then I can use that as an opportunity to grow forward. So some of these myths that these are saturated is because people are using the same tool sets to all end up in the same locations. The same way a lot of people Shopify go on in 2015 through 2019 and all end up with AliExpress products all competing with each other.
Yeah.
Because pivoted into brands. And very few people did and are having great success now that they moved out of that space and pivoted into brands, right? And that's your opportunity. Sure, start as a side. Sure, if you still got your 9-to-5 lifeline, or you got a business, or you're doing something else in real estate or whatever else you're doing, you can start it as a side hustle. Just mentally don't treat it that way, right? This is a misconception, I think, that's pushed through courses and programs and hopium guru dealers on YouTube, right? They're just handing them out like dime bags, and everybody wants to suck it down because there's some desperation in the market. I get it. I've been bankrupt before with three little children. I know what people feel when it comes to desperation money.
Right.
I'm not opposite of that effect. I am not in that position anymore, thank you God, but I have been there. And so I understand that concern and desperation, but that is also your opportunity to slow down, take a deep breath, and realize that if you want to change yourself in 3 to 5 years, you have to do these things right now. That's another myth of the online marketing world that we have to debunk today. It takes 3 to 5 years to build a real business. Okay? Understanding that if you don't do it correctly with the end in mind, by the time you get to 3 to 5 years, you're going to be the 80% of the statistics of businesses that actually fail. Believe it or not, when you go look up the Department of Commerce and stats from some of the pollsters, you'll find that most businesses can get off the ground in the first year. They can even be profitable in the first year. And the problem becomes growth. Understanding revenues that translates into profits, that translates into growth, that actually gives you the opportunity for scale. Okay. It is a multi-step process. In the same way that I see these 20-year-old life coaches, I wish I was as confident as them, right? Out with their check marks on Facebook and other places, acting like gurus, like they have the knowledge. They don't have the experience.
Right.
Right. Knowledge is application and execution, even imperfectly, because something perfect will happen along the way. It leads you to the knowledge that actually gains you the wisdom. So guys, don't shortcut those opportunities. Failure is quitting altogether. Failure is not a campaign that doesn't work right on meta ads. Failure is not a product that doesn't test right during a market test. Failure is stopping. In fact, when I got started, Steve, in the marketing and online world, you know how many campaigns I ran for my first mobile campaigns before my first one actually popped off?
No.
301.
Wow.
Right. The first 300 failed because they never became profitable.
Right.
And so the 301st one actually became profitable.
Mm-hmm.
And that knowledge curve, that execution, the tenacity, and not to pat myself on the back, I just hate to lose. Because I wouldn't give up, stubborn wise, even putting it on credit cards. And I was like, oh crap, I don't know how I'm going to pay for this, but I'm like, I'm going to figure this out one way or another. Came to realization that moment of clarity hit on the 301st campaign. And then every campaign after that was profitable. And pretty soon I'm doing thousands a day in profit. So we need to treat these, myths as what they actually are. There's truth in the myth, but please understand that the whole myth is not true.
It kind of reminds me too of, there's a quote, I forget how it goes, but it takes like 10 years to be an overnight success.
15 to 17 years to be an overnight success. I know. I'm not a guru. I just play one on the internet.
Yeah.
The truth of it is that, you know, if you want to understand what somebody knows and you don't want to be scammed into falling into those hopium dealers and getting down the wrong ways and actually sucking the wrong myths, then you have to execute first.
Right.
You execute first, you realize very quickly when somebody's telling you the truth online. Okay. And I think if anybody's listening to this today and you're not trying, first try, see how far you can get, and then go look for a coach or a mentor or somebody along the way to help you out. Because at that point, you'll be able to, you know, flesh out the differences in their language and say, well, that's not even true. Even in my basic knowledge, I know that's not true.
Yeah. Well, it's the whole 0 to 1 kind of concept too, right? I mean, it's just like you have to kind of do it yourself too, to kind of see where you are and speak the right language and kind of, you know, because no one can teach you like A to Z on how to be successful in D2C.
Not in a matter of a few months, not in a matter of a few weeks.
Not a hope.
Courses are great and the information is good if you do something with it. And we all know that a lot of times people don't do anything with it. So that's my challenge to you, right?
Yeah.
If you're going to come to the myths, if you want to overcome these challenges of the idea of saturation and all this nonsense, you got to look past that point and say, okay, what am I missing in this, right? And if it's me not executing first to learn and start the process even imperfectly, then that's your best step. That's your best opportunity today, right? Then you will actually listen and understand what the next steps are. And again, saturation and this kind of stuff that people go on about, the idea that Amazon fees are going to collapse the system and these kinds of things, they are by players who are not playing in certain areas. We are 100% private label. Brand building, trademark, registrations, if necessary, patent design and patent pending on the utility side.
Right.
So you got to look at the intrinsic value of the business and then look at the intrinsic value of where you're going. Don't just discount that as short term, but really think about it as a 3 to 5 year opportunity. I mean, where else in the world, Steve, in our age, have you ever seen businesses make it to 8 figures in 5 years?
Yeah, no.
These were decades in the making.
Uh-huh.
We can do that in 5 years now.
Right.
So there's so much opportunity that I think that's what gets confusing for people.
Yeah.
They start to acquiesce. What should I actually do? Because there's so much opportunity. And then they kind of do that squirrel thing where they jump to thing to thing. And right now, the squirrel thing is AI. Well, I told you we were doing AI back in 2000, right?
Yeah.
So AI is not a new thing. It's just a new idea in application for some technologies that finally reached, you know, some market maturity. We use it now to condense processes that were, you know, manual previously, like listing creation that used to take 2 to 3 days to do copywriting, evaluation, and whatnot. We can do that in 2 to 3 hours now, right? So we can do images and graphics and photo shoots that used to cost $5,000. We can do that for a couple $100 now. Right. So AI is just becoming a tool, again, like a hammer when swung correctly, that can do good things. Mm. But, you know, if you're going to go do AI and you want to be good at it, then go be a prompt engineer. There's $300,000 job wrecks out there right now to be an amazing prompt engineer. Like, again, there's so much opportunity. Don't miss out on it with your scarcity limiting mindset and so buy into it with the hopium stuff.
Yeah, I got the poster on my wall about the growth mindset and the fixed mindset. Trust me.
Yeah, right?
I'm well aware of that.
Again, there's truth in every 80% in every joke, right? There's truth in all of these jokes. But at the end of the day, you know, it's application and execution that I look for when people come to talk to me. Hmm. When they come and say, well, I never tried this and I hear all this nonsense and not whatever, I'm not going to try to convince them. That's not what I'm going to do. You understand?
Yeah.
The affect of it is that if they have walked some process, okay, and they have some little bit of scarring in their walk, then they'll most likely be ready to do it the right way.
So what happens when brands, is a slight pivot to another topic that I'm thinking of about internationalization and, you know, with the China market, the India market, and then, you know, other non-English speaking locales. What's your take on that? Should brands double down on North America first and then choose other English speaking countries next? Or what's the opportunity worldwide?
Yeah, I mean, the worldwide global DTC, everything is huge, right? It's going to be $6.7 trillion, if I'm not mistaken. Department of Commerce, Forest Research, go double check my stats, but I believe it's about $6.7 trillion. It's huge, okay? America's about 1.1 last year, 1.3 coming up.
Okay.
So at that rate, you look at the platform specific, and for Amazon, if we look at that one first, the .com for United States, Amazon.com makes more than all the other ones combined. Right. So if I'm going to go play in a channel and take time, I'm not going to the other channels. In fact, I don't sell any of the other Amazon channels. Yes, there's opportunity. Yes, I'm sure somebody who plays on Amazon will look at this and say, well, that's dumb. Why don't you get in the other channels? Well, because in the American market, we are the consumer market of the world. Okay. They follow all around the world. Yes, there are opportunities to niche in certain areas and carve those out. And it makes sense to do that for us in the Amazon world. Starting there, we won't mess with the other marketplaces. When we go D2C with those channels, you are now international, right? Except for TikTok Shop, which has a limitation to some degree because international sellers cannot get on TikTok Shop very easily right now without going through a whole lot of hoops.
Right.
To do it. But there are other channels of international that TikTok will get to shortly. So it's a big US play right now on that platform. Of course, website, WooCommerce, and Shopify go out to that side and you can touch the entire world, right? So that's a huge opportunity to expand into channels in which the specific audience or reach of that audience makes most intent in search. Because it's, again, not if I do that, it's when I do that. You can't eat the quote unquote elephant all at once. I know people have said this over and over again, and I really need people to hear this. I do not let a seller, or quote unquote, do not let, I do not advise that a seller within my group and control of my client base who's working with us focus on a second channel until the first one has gone past seven figures.
I see.
Focus until one channel is successfully profitable, brings you from the micro to the macro level in which you can then bring resources and other people to bear. And then your time, energy, and attention can be focused on opening the next channel because it's going to take its time, energy, and attention and money to get the avatar, the development and stuff right. The only caveat I play with right now is if we have a successful market launch that tests the product successfully and goes into a full product launch on the Amazon channel, we will now go over with the full product launch and open the TikTok Shop channel. Because now we're looking at a lateral to lateral SEO based organic engine that's crossing over between the two at the algorithmic level.
I see.
Right. So there's a huge, you can't do that with Shopify, right? Because TikTok Shop has an SEO play.
Right.
And it's built into the platform. So when I do that, and then that traffic is crossing over, they're going to Amazon.
I see.
So with that SEO and opportunity, I'm now hitting both of those channels. And on a product launch, that makes it the right time to do it now because it's actually matured well enough into some of their policies and platforms. And even now, there's still violations and other nonsense to play around with. And not all products will get officially approved on TikTok. Ask me how I know, especially in like the health and beauty space. Very difficult. Be careful with that because it's going to be challenged to get it on there. But once it's on and it's going, you know, there's an opportunity for those things to cross over SEO wise, both internally on TikTok and back to Amazon. They will both get a reach and you're going to reach an organic influencer and SEO driven component of that. And then I would move them into Shopify next if they go successfully on those two platforms, just to stabilize the DTC platform and do the follow up processes and everything for that brand later on.
I'm going to add to the Shopify side because it's kind of more my forte and expertise, but the Shopify's Markets Pro product, which I think is powered by Global E.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting because it's so easy to turn it on right now and gives you language and currency and local payment gateways kind of outside of Visa and MasterCard. There's a lot of local methods of payment in different countries. And there's a legal term about the fulfillment of the product into international markets, and it's all managed through Shopify's kind of Markets Pro product, which I think is powered by Global E. I just want to throw that out there that anybody listening today, if you're just wholly only maybe shipping domestically in the US and you want to start shipping into Canada as your next opportunity, turning on Shopify Markets is a great starting point to at least have Canadian currency and duty and tax in cart. That's a good starting point. And then when you want to start moving into European markets and otherwhere, then you move into the Markets Pro product. Product, and that will allow you to have them be the legal owner of the product, and it transfers correctly through DHL's kind of express shipping options.
Awesome. Yeah, it's great to know. And you're the expert on that channel, no doubt about it. So I'm listening.
Absolutely. Well, this has been like, I have like, I don't know, 3 pages of notes right now. So I've learned a ton today. I want to thank you so much for coming on the show today, Neil. Like, is there any kind of final kind of parting notes and things like, or any kind of takeaways, kind of next steps for those that are listening today?
I think in simple summary, your opportunity begins at the end of your excuses. So there's really no reason for you not to get out there today and take on e-commerce, which is really the fastest growing industry in the marketplace. While other things are not penciling in, people are falling to e-commerce for both business buying and business development because it is a double-digit growth industry. Like it or not, we're consumerisms. Both across the world and the United States, we consume everything we can consume. So there's huge opportunities to do it the right way. You can fail up in this by products that don't necessarily go well, launch another product. So really at the end of the day, I think the overarching theme should be that building a brand is your opportunity, not just flipping products for profit. That was like years ago. You got to get out of that mindset and that hustle thing mindset that people do drives me nuts.
Yeah.
And you got to think about building a business that actually turns into a saleable asset that is worth more in the end than at any time during the business building phase. And that is building the business for exit. So I want that to make sure that people understand that like building a house is not just the one you're going to live in, but it's something that you could flip for profit. And if you do it the right way, we can have generational wealth moments. Like Daniel Espy is about to make a generational exit after 5 years with more than 10 million in clear out when it's all said and done. He has a huge opportunity and he was a golf course manager when he started, right? So he has no e-commerce experience. So there's a huge opportunity for the digital and physical asset component of these types of models to build in the opportunity for the financial and the freedoms and all the things you know and think and believe most likely that are not myths about this. I mean, I live on 40 acres in the country with my family. We homeschool my four daughters. We have a heritage seed garden. We play all the time. We go around together as a family. And that's become a lifestyle driven business model for us because of e-commerce. Right. And it has that opportunity for everybody. But make no mistakes, pros and cons were the goal of today's call, not to just glorify everything in its ignorance, but to make sure that people have a good baseline of understanding and the opportunity. And I hope that was well translated through the call today.
Yeah, no, I think it was lovely. I know we kind of chatted in the green room before recording today and understand that you'd have a little kind of a special offer for those listening today that's saying, hey, I want to go to the next step. And, you know, hey, Neil, your team is Voltage. Is there an opportunity here? Potentially, you said you only 4 or 5 partners kind of you were able to take on at any one time, but you do have courses and different things. So just I'm going to throw back to you, what sort of our next steps if people want to kind of start working with you potentially?
Yep. So business builders is where we start people who have no experience and want to build a business and get going and work as in an incubator format with us over 12 months with a performance goal attached to that, where I put some money and some skin in the game. Okay. So if I feel you're a good fit, I'm going to put up 10K skin in the game against our fees. And if we lose that, which I hate to lose, So we got some performance-based skin in the game, I believe, with working with people. If you go to voltagedm.com and you apply, we're going to have a conversation. You're going to talk to me. There's actually a DISC assessment profile you go through because we have a long-term opportunity to do many things in business, including the acquisition and exit of companies. So this fits well with people who are at the business builder life stage of their, getting out of their 9-to-5 and things like that. It's not really for somebody who just wants to get into a side hustle. It's a real business operation at the end of the day. And then, the acquisition side and the PE side and the investment side, we talk about all those things as well. There's a free training on there to kind of learn a little bit more about what we do. We have a book out that just launched in January. I don't know if I mentioned that to you, Steve, or not, but it is available on our site for 70% off at voltagedm.com/book. You can grab a digital copy and a paperback copy of that book, Almost Automated Income with FBA, where I go through how we set up systems, processes, technology, and people to really turn this into a truly lifestyle business where our operators allow us to run companies. We have 8 of them, and it takes about 4 operators, 20 hours a week to manage it once you set this up, right? So we teach people how to do that through the book.
We wrote the book. So
for you guys to learn and adapt, which I appreciate greatly. He's been trust along the way and then decide if you want to reach out, you'll talk to me.
Kevin Harrington, original Shark Tank cast member.
And so I had the honor of having him be able to write the foreword for the book.
Yeah. Yeah. Lovely. Okay. I'm going to have all these links in the show notes. And I'm also going to have a redirect to, all these different landing pages, both the Voltage, the book, the Almost Automated Income with FBA. I also have a link over to the Simple Profit Playbook. And then ways of getting a hold of you. I have your phone number and some details and things like that. That'll be at ecommercefastlane.com/voltage. That'll redirect to a nice, neat little landing page of all these details and stuff. So Neil, this has been eye-opening, motivational, exciting, aspirational. I mean, here's all the adjectives I want to throw out here, but there is opportunity out there for those that are willing to put in the time, getting your ducks in a row, so to speak, from your business acumen, but getting in there and actually doing the work and learning. So I appreciate that.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me on. I'm honored that we got to spend some time together.
All right.
Appreciate you, brother.
Well, that's it for today's episode. I'd like to thank you personally for being a loyal listener of E-commerce Fastlane. It's my hope that this podcast is offering you a ton of value through growth strategies, tactics, and exclusive insider tips on the best Shopify apps and marketing platforms. all with my personal goal to help you build, manage, grow, and scale a successful and thriving company powered by Shopify. Thanks for investing some time today and listening to the show. I'm so proud and excited that you have a growth mindset and are a constant learner. I truly appreciate you and your entrepreneurial journey. Enjoy the rest of the week and keep thriving with Shopify.